that photo sign there, actually. And this is a video of the CNC router basically routing it out, and then him putting the varnish on it and everything. But for CNC routing, what we do is, I mean, obviously, what it is it's a machine that basically takes the extensive work of routing in letters that, you know, people used to use stencils and route in letters into the board. But this does it all automated, and it's very precise and everything. So all we do is we put it, we design it in software, put in, you know, how wide the board is and everything, and then send it to the router. And it's basically just a bunch of ones and zeros of how it goes. And this can be used. I mean, we use it for last few years. I made a lot of signs. We made that sign, and there's a sign in the middle school.
This one here, right?
Yeah, that one is actually this video.
Mm-hmm.
And then the food cart that's in the high school, I made that 2 years ago. And all of the borough signs around the town were used with the CNC router too. But and we made these.
That's awesome.
So this was all made the same way, but you can also do designs. So some people have made table talks, and they'll route in different floral designs and things, and you know, like on stools. And then, yeah, basically it's just, I mean, whatever you want to put on a piece of wood, or you can cut out metal and everything, you can easily do with the CNC router.
That's awesome. Do you want your kids to talk about those?
All right. I'm going to be talking about using the 3D printer and the 3D scanner. And 3D printing and 3D scanning is basically the exact opposite of the CNC router. And in this video, it's using a beam of light to scan an object, and it rotates the object 360 degrees on a plate, and it maps it. And then this is a video of it printing, and instead of cutting something out, it's actually melting a plastic filament, and this is called an extruder, and it's extruding it into the shape that it's taking. And over time, it will take the shape that we just scanned, and here it's scanning a chess piece.
That's awesome.
And I have a die that I printed and designed in Sketchy for the past few years.
Cool.
And then, and a couple of our students are designing a prosthetic hand. It covers from the elbow all the way to the fingertips, and it has many different parts, and it's all being 3D printed, and there's and it has wires and servos in it, so it can and then once the coating is finished, they'll be able to move the fingers of the hand.
So cool. You guys should introduce yourselves too. I don't know if everybody knows.
I'm Gus.
And Britton and AJ.
More seats over here.
There are seats up here, you guys. You want, Tom, do you guys want to come up and sit?
Yeah, so with my part, I for the last about month or so, I have been working on a drum set piece, trying to rebuild a drum set piece. Do you guys want to see the version? So it was cracked down the side, so I've been trying to replicate that in SketchUp. Now, to do a problem that will be eventually used, like in a real-life situation, it's kind of hard because you have to get the exact, almost exact measurements and all shapes, sizes, and usually curved surfaces are harder to reproduce, so I'm gonna... So I'm going to just show a easy couple things you can build on this, so I'm just going to make a box. And the best part about this is that you can create stuff in 3D, so if you do eventually transfer it to the crypto like Brittany was talking about, you can actually have it, like for example your die. He made that on his SketchUp.
Cool.
So. And of course, there's some other things that it can make, such as it has a 3D warehouse feature, so you can get stuff that could be in real life, like for example, this helicopter, bike, and of course, not so real things. And just for another example, this is what Britton's brother, Skipper, did. He created this for his Boy Scout project, and that's the new porch for our church, so.
Yes. Cool, that's awesome. Is that the one you built for Boy Scouts?
Yeah.
That one?
That was Eagle Scout project.
Your Eagle Scout project.
He took a picture of the church grounds and then designed it.
That's really
that's cool.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Great. Right. John, do you want to talk at all about what this is, what class
yeah,
this is
yeah,
from?
These three guys, well, AJ's been with me a long time, other than the CAD class. He's been in the tech room, and we've moved with Mr. Owens taking the vocational route. We moved the computer-aided drafting and design and manufacturing over to the shop environment so more students can benefit from it instead of just a handful that are in the tech room. And so we have currently 11 enrolled in that class, and we're pursuing all sorts of projects, learning about the three-dimensional software, as well as doing some real-life authentic work for the community and for students in our own environment. So we're learning as we go. Currently, we're using SketchUp software. We're pursuing some other more industry-standard CAD programs such as Rhino and AutoCAD. So the goal is just to build this program and to continue building wonderful things. Hopefully we'll have a robotic hand for you in a month or so when the coding's right. So these three guys are in that program, and they also work outside of that, often in the tech room too. So. Thanks for taking an evening to come in and talk to them.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you guys.
Appreciate it. There's a map.
What?
Crew. Doctor?
I'm only introducing. I'm Mr. K, and I'm here with Mrs. Khan. We're both fourth grade teachers at Stedman Elementary. And so last year was when we found out that Mr. Owens was leaving us, all our hearts were broken. And so. But it's turned into a win-win-win situation because now we have Mrs. Khan taking over Dave, and Dave has now moved on to the shop, which, of course, we had to use. And so I said, Dave, our first project is in landforms. Could you make us some maps? And he's like, yeah, you know, David. Sure. I'll take my students right on. And so it was a monumental event. The classes got to go over and watch them make these, which was a good experience for my fourth graders, and a good experience for Mr. Owens' class to actually be able to make these. So we took these, and we used them for our first unit in our social studies on landforms of Alaska. And we brought some students to showcase what they have done with Mr. Owens' work. So,
cool.
Why don't you come up here, and I think it probably rested maybe right up here. I'll get it for you. This is a three-dimensional relief map that was created by these gentlemen.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so you can turn that
forward. Yeah, don't bump it, don't knock it.
Okay.
That's cool.
Hi, my name is Logan.
My name is Kieran.
And these are Alaska's landforms. Alaska is a fascinating and amazing state because of its landforms and its many resources. Two of the major mountain ranges in Alaska are the Alaska Range and the Brooks Range. The Alaska Range is home to the tallest mountain in North America, Mount McKinley. The Brooks Range is named after the geologist Alfred H. Brooks. One of the major rivers in Alaska is the Yukon River.
It moves up in the far northwestern British Columbia. The Yukon River rushes across Canada's Yukon Territory and Alaska. The Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska are two very important seas. The Bering Sea comprises a deep water basin, which then goes up through a narrow slope into the shallow water above the continental shelves. The Gulf of Alaska reaches through the southeastern boundary of Alaska from the Alaska Peninsula to the Alexander Archipelago.
That is why Alaska is such a fantastic state.
Good job, guys.
That's really cool.
That looks awesome.
So this is the closest we got to done. We are a little further behind the cave class. So we are in the process.
I'm Grace.
I'm Isabel.
First off, thank you, Mr. Owens, for cutting out the mess. In Ms. Khan's fourth grade class, we made 3D topographical maps of Alaska. A topographical map shows the elevation and other special features of the area being mapped. We used colors and clay to show different types of landscapes. Mountains, like mountains, rivers, and sometimes islands. The colors the dark blue is 300 to 10,000 feet. The medium blue is 150 to 300 feet. And the light blue is 0 to 100 feet. The dark green is 0 to 500.
The light yellow is 1,000 to 5,000.
The yellow is 5,000 to 10,000 feet.
And the orange is over 10,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun making our mountains and painting them different colors.
There were two mountain ranges we sent. The Brooks Range and Alaska Range.
This is the Alaska Range. And it was really fun making it. Because it was one of the most popular landmarks.
This is the Brooks Range. thank you, lady.
Good job, girl. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
See that close?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see it. Watch out for the cord there. Just trip on it.
There you go. Oh, that
there
was
you go.
Awesome, girls.
Good job.
That what material did you use to make your mountains?
We used model magic to make their mountains.
Is that what the other group did too? Model magic?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you all started with one of the blank ones that Mr. K showed before? So you just started with one that was just the shape of Alaska?
Mm-hmm.
You
nice.
Had to build it up? Good job.
Yeah.
How many was there? Is that just one for the whole class or were there?
No, there are other ones.
Mm-hmm. So lots of groups in your class? So that one is the one that you two made?
Two?
Well, not really.
Oh. More than the two of you?
These were the two girls willing to come tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And then we used the map that was closest to being done so that they could talk a little bit.
Okay,
there's
perfect.
There's still in the works.
Yeah, very nice
work.
Job. Yes. Okay. Thank you, students and parents, for bringing your kids on in the evening. It certainly is enjoyable to see what's going on in the classroom. So we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. Sharon, can you call the roll? Here.
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 Here. Okay. All present. So please rise to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. We had our student presentation, so I'll make a motion to, I think we wanted to make an amendment to the agenda. 13. Under new business, 13.3, additional personnel changes, and 13.9, resignation and acceptance. I'll make a motion to add this to the agenda. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor? Aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. It's been added to the agenda. Now I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for November 10th, 2015. Can I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion's been made and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? Motion passes, 5-0. Looks like our student is not with us this evening. No?
I'm not sure.
But she's sick.
Oh, I know something's going around town. Okay. Okay. Correspondence? Anything from the state or nothing? Okay. Comments from the audience unrelated to any of the agenda items? Comments from the audience related to agenda items? John?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you come on up to the microphone, state your name for the record, and...
I have two comments I'd like to make. My name's John Heverlick, and I'm representing myself. First one, I'd like to congratulate the teachers, Ms. Kahn and Mr. Owens, and the shop teachers for the beautiful job they did on these projects. I was not the brightest kid in the world and went through some shop classes when I was younger, and they were nothing like this. And it's just phenomenal how well they've done. And I really appreciate it, and I know Mara's brother, Greg in Fairbanks, does some similar things, and it's just fantastic seeing the products that your students have accomplished. And on behalf of the Chamber, I'd like to offer a pizza party to the students for these different projects. And, you know, that's a commercial part of the presentation. But they have done beautifully. And they all have their hands and everything. And I never went through a shop class where, everybody had those. It was impressive. And the other thing I wanted, I had a comment on the memorials project you're doing or the policy you're doing. And I've spent 30 years in education as a special education teacher, a university instructor, assistant principal, principal, assistant superintendent, like I said, over 30 years, and I've had a lot of experience in this area. And then I spent several years with Petersburg Indian Association and 3 years with the state evaluating programs throughout the state. So I've had experience all the way from Ketchikan to Barrow and from the West Coast to the East, and have dealt a lot with this issue. And so I think I have some little bit of credibility in speaking to this. And on your specific write-up that you've done, I would suggest that on the dedicating the page in the yearbook, I wouldn't be in favor of that. And also on, and I printed this off, and also on the second page, the last three paragraphs I would delete, where it says, in recognition that schools are designed primarily to support learning, and approve temporary memorials. And then the paragraph after the approved temporary memorials, I think, is fine. And the last one, the life of a deceased student, I think you'd be better off deleting those from your policy. I think it's going to cause you more problems than assistance. And working with, like, the Fairbanks School District, Anchorage School District, we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars with attorney fees and have, like I said, dealt with this. And most school districts, for a number of reasons, have decided it's best not to do memorials. We've all lost people we love, people that we've taught with, students we've taught. And when I was in Petersburg, we lost a couple. We lost one student just going from her home to the school bus. And I still think about her every week. She was just a wonderful kid, one that you wanted to choke one time and then just feel great about the next second. She was unbelievable, and her spirit was just phenomenal. And I still love thinking about her, but I would never memorialize her or any student. And I think it's one of those slippery slope things, and it's an issue of liability you don't ever want to get into, because there are so many children, students that are kind of lost, have needs, or have emotions that just haven't been met. And by saying that we value one life over another, we memorialize one life over another, one, that isn't fair. The other is that we're sending a message to people that we're recognizing, and not really making them a hero or making them special, but if you have a student, and this is my experience from being in the small towns and villages and large cities, that if you have a student that's hurting and that is needs attention, and you're showing attention for someone that is passed, no matter what the reason, suicide, accident, whatever, some kids want that recognition and need it desperately and think that maybe the only way I'm going to get that is because they've seen someone else recognized. And I wouldn't want to be in that situation of doing that. And with the attorneys I've dealt with And like I said, I've been in districts that's paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to attorneys making decisions. They'll tell you that you don't want to be liable or to just be even associated with doing, recognizing something like this. So I would really urge you to consider not having memorials. It's not being disrespectful to children or adults or staff or anyone. It's being respectful of everybody. And I think the only way you can do that is just by letting the families follow their own grief and doing what they need to do and staying out of it. It's not your job. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Is there anyone else that would like to speak right now? Otherwise, we also have a public testimony period during that.
I will.
Okay.
I have a busy night ahead of me, as we all do.
Okay. You state your name.
I'm Susan Erickson, and I, too, would like to thank Mr. Painter and Mr. Owens and Mr. Kay and all the other teachers and PHS people, or not just PHS, Peterborough School District people that are here for the wonderful tutelage that they give and nurturing that they give all of the students. Here, my oldest boy who graduated last year, there was his Eagle Scout project, courtesy of, you know, Mr. Painter's class, and saw him on the video. And just because I'm taking just a moment before I get into my real presentation, we went to Parents Weekend. You know, he graduated last year, so we had to go see him. We sat down with him. We said, Skipper, you know, how's it going? What were you prepared, or what's fun? And this was his quote to us, which his father and I aren't really quite sure what it means, but Petersburg High School prepared him for whatever this is. He said, it's great. I got to change the liquid helium in a superconducting spinner magnetometer. So whatever that means, thank you, Petersburg teachers and staff, for encouraging him. We don't know what that means. I wanted to talk about the memorial policy also. I'm in support of a memorial policy for the school district. I, too, have some skin in the game, a different kind than John. I have, for three reasons. One, I have a brother that died at a young age, a long time ago. I'll pull it together. When he died, he was memorialized through plaques and trophies and awards that were given out at the University of Washington, in the crew house, and in his hometown of Detroit, at the clubhouse where he rowed and he swam. He was a great guy. It was a long time ago. It's still painful, as you can see. But time marches on, and through remodeling, through plaques being used up and given away, things got taken down off the walls. They're not there anymore. They're in a basement somewhere. We dealt with it. Life has moved on. It happens. I really think you need a memorial policy that's fair, that's strong. I haven't had a chance to reread or read these. I just picked up tonight were new issues or new policies from other districts. I'm going to read those. But that's the first reason I feel like I have some skin in this game. I've walked that path. I lost a brother. He was a great guy. Second reason is my son I just talked about. He won one of the awards you're going to get off the shelf, the Ed Fugelvog Memorial Scholarship. It's a non-financial scholarship. That award has been given out since Ed died to a student who was voted by his peers for epitomizing the definition of friendship. That's the only scholarship my kid got this last year. But you know what? That award was so meaningful to my boy to be selected from his peers. What do you do with it? They don't know Ed Fugelvog. He was a teacher here. Wonderful guy. Me, personally, I wrote Mildred, and I said how proud I was that my son had received that award, even though he had no idea who Ed Fugelvog was. But it was the spirit of the award. Kids today don't know him. They have no idea. Maybe that Ed Fugelvog is one of those that needs a few more names on it, and then it's going to go off the walls too. The third one, I'll circle back to that in just a second. The third one is, I personally had the privilege of receiving a state insurance award, which is called the Ed Dimmick Award. Now, none of you guys have ever heard of Ed Dimmick. I hadn't either. When I got the award, a long time ago, we learned who Ed was, and I was proud to receive it for, it's given to the, whatever, it doesn't matter the criteria, but it's a big criteria, and I was pleased. I felt special. Now, 15 years after I received that award, the new people on the block 2 years ago said, nobody knows Ed Dimmick. Get rid of this award. Let's keep the award and get rid of Ed. And it was really kind of painful to me. I mean, I never knew Ed. I received the award, and I knew the spirit in which the award was being given. So it was passing. It dredged up my brother. You know, the award goes bye-bye. People don't care anymore. It's not they don't care. Let me rephrase that. They don't know the person. They know the intent of the award. So what they're bickering over is they're going to keep the intent of the award, which is what I would encourage you with the Ed Fugelvog Award, too. Change the name of it, perhaps. Maybe it's the Viking Spirit Award to the senior still voted by his peers as the epitome of friendship. The Ed Dimmick Award, maybe the Insurance Person of the Year, whatever you want to do. But it's important to acknowledge people for their work in a non-financial way. So anyway, there are my comments on it. I'm going to stay involved in watching this one through. It's really painful. There have been 4 or 5 kids that I can think of that have passed in our community, and we love every single one of them to this day. And they're kept alive through people remembering them, as John did. I haven't thought of that little girl, but now I remember. So, anyway, I'm in favor of your memorial policy. I'm sorry, but it's an emotional issue. It doesn't matter if it was 8 months or 18 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Anybody else like to speak at this time? Okay. Yeah. Ann?
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Ann Tate, and I'm a parent with a couple kids in the high school. So, but I felt that this really needed to be said, and don't let that I have 3 pages scare you. It's big print. First, with respect, I'd like to say that I'm very sorry for the enduring pain and grief that those who have lost a child or family loved one are going through. It is obvious that this subject has opened old wounds and that no parent should have to relive. However, some feedback throughout the community, especially through social media, has been overly critical and seemingly hostile to the school board administration and possibly to anyone who did not grow up here. I don't think this speaks very well for our community. This issue is not about big city ideals. It's about what's best for the children in an educational environment. I, for one, am very appreciative of those who have chosen to serve on the board, those we as a community have elected to give up countless hours of their personal family time to govern and provide direction for the school district. I do not forget that the administration, along with our teachers and aides, have partnered with you, the parents, to help raise our community's children to be well-educated and good citizens. Everyone here has a lot invested in our children, and this community and does not deserve to be told to go live somewhere else. I understand that our schools are a gathering place for our community, but in my opinion, they are first and foremost a learning environment and not the best choice for permanent memorials. I would like to think that we as a community could come up with some alternative memorial like planting a tree or a park bench that could heal the hearts of those left behind. I would like this board to know that not everyone in the community is against you on this issue. There are many here that recognize this is a very difficult and thankless issue to address. I would imagine that those most opposed to the new policy do not realize you have literally spent years considering and researching the memorial policy. It is obviously not a decision you've made lightly, especially knowing the tax you would endure. I would ask you again to do what is best for the children in a learning environment. The time you give serving our community throughout the school board is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Jay? Cool, thanks.
Hi, my name is Jay Stanton Greger. I'm here representing myself. Two different things to touch on. I'll start with the memorial policy. I think John Haverlick made some really good points. I think that stuff could go. Frankly, I like it as is. I spent more time than I would have liked years ago writing policy for a company I worked at. And feedback I was given by somebody much smarter than myself is there's no such thing as a perfect policy. You can only do your best. You can be sued for anything. Think of your intent. What's your goal? And what do you hope to accomplish with the policy? I was at a work session a little while ago talking about how if we really wanted to, or if you guys really wanted to, you can make that policy, you know, 45 pages looking for all the different contingencies that could come up, different scenarios. You could do that. I hope you don't for your sake. It sounds exhausting. In short, I like it. Do your best with it. I think you've put in good effort, and I think your hearts are coming from the right place. The second one I wanted to touch on was the uniform and dress code one. I was listening on the radio today and heard the discussion item involving dress code for PE and also a potential change to volleyball uniforms as they may be seen as potentially too revealing. I think any change to dress code for volleyball players or PE students sends a very clear and negative message to our students. Frankly, the fact that it is a discussion item does also. The clear message is this. We don't see girls as student athletes. Instead, they're being viewed as sexual objects because their uniforms show too much skin. To tell these student athletes their uniforms are inappropriate is insulting to their intelligence. If we tell volleyball players the uniforms are inappropriate, now potential role models like Olympic volleyball players are no longer appropriate role models due to their inappropriate attire. They also are now sexual objects. Send a horrible message to our girls. Boys, too. To tell boys they are incapable of seeing volleyball student athletes as anything besides sexual objects because the uniform shows some skin is also an insult to their intelligence. We don't have these discussions about male wrestling outfits, do we? Major disconnect. In closing, any serious pursuit of this topic, in my opinion, would be blatantly misogynistic, discriminatory, and send a very poor message to both male and female students and the greater community alike. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you. Are there any other comments related to the agenda items? Okay. Comments from board members? Okay. We'll move on to the consent agenda. I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda. Can I have a second?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. Sharon, can you call the roll?
Megan Blitzer?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Cheryl Boyle?
Yes.
Mara Lutensky?
Yes. Okay, motion passes 5-0. Administrator report, superintendent report, Erica Painter.
I have several things that I think I need to address further down with AMP testing and lots of other things, so I might just briefly say that I wanted to recognize the student presentation here tonight as a very positive way to start this meeting.
we've had a lot of things on our plate this fall, a lot of things that have taken our time from the state level, a lot of initiatives that we've worked on locally and statewide, and then, of course, a lot of emotional issues these last couple of months that have been very difficult for people. While I think all these things are clearly important and we have to work with them and deal with them, difficult as they are, I think it's important for us to stay focused on what we're about, which is taking time to see what these fabulous kids are doing, recognizing their work, and the work of many of the teachers in our school district. I just want to kind of keep the focus there for myself, too, because it's easy to kind of go down these different places and become, maybe overly involved in some things that take a lot of time. We need to be focusing on opportunities for our kids for exploration and growth and mistakes and challenges and learning and all of those wonderful things. And we're going to keep going down that road and doing that with our students and teachers, our community. And we can do it with compassion, tolerance. We're good problem solvers. We're going to be okay. We can do it. So, anyway, I have lots of other things to talk about, but I'll wait. So.
Okay. Maintenance report. Dan Tate.
Well, good evening. In the past couple of years, I've often promised to keep it short, and tonight I'm going to endeavor to do so. Let's hope I can keep it together. On the custodial front, in this past September, we had a visit from one of our cleaning products sales rep, and he spent 2 hours with our custodians showing us basic product safety and how to use the products most effectively. And after that meeting was over, I walked around the school with schools with this particular gentleman and told him where I thought we were failing in some areas and where I could use some guidance so I could, you know, direct my custodians more properly. And one of the areas that I came up with is deep cleaning of our bathrooms, and he gave me some great takeaways on that. And in the past 2 weeks, we have started working on a project in two of our oldest bathrooms, stripping away as much as we can old cleaning products, old seals, and things like that. And let's just say that we've got a long ways to go, but the first results look promising, and we hope to have better product for you in the future for all of our community when they come into our schools. So that's one area that I'm concentrating on with our custodians. And I'd also like to acknowledge my evening high school custodians. This past October was very rainy and wet, and the leaves came down in a big, wet, sloppy, slick mess. And I think they did a reasonably good job of trying to get out there when they could to keep those stairs and sidewalks as safe as possible. And when it was dry, they got the leaves out of the grass as well. And I was very appreciative of them to take that effort on their own to do that for us. On the maintenance side of things, with Rands and I, these are just our major accomplishments for the month of October. Essentially, winter is on its way, isn't it? And I would like to say that we are ready, from ice melt to plows to boilers. That's what we spent most of this last 4 weeks working on. And I say, let it snow. We're ready. So I'm happy for that. Now you don't have to feel the same way I do, but I'm ready for it. Rands and I tracked down an intermittent short in the high school parking lot lights. We did have some delays getting started on that project. Maybe some of you were aware that the lights had been out in the parking lot. That was mostly due to that we had some other major pertinent maintenance things that we had to finish up first, and we also had to get an excavator in. And we got lucky. We found the problem fairly quickly on the first day, and we got that solved. And I just want to tell the public we appreciate your patience. We're basically just a two-man shop, and when you get right down, we're probably a one-and-a-quarter to one-and-a-half-man shop, because a lot of times I'm stuck behind a computer and doing that type of work. We also retrofitted lights in the covered walkway at the elementary school. We removed a dozen 70-watt bulbs and replaced them with higher-efficiency 11-watt bulbs that reduced our wattage by 708 watts. That's about an 80% reduction in power consumption for the same amount of illumination. So we'll see a little savings with that. Caleb Cullum, under the direction of John Painter, they installed a high-tech security camera system in the high school shop. I'm just reporting on that. We we weren't really involved in that. But we also installed a let's call it a lower tech security system, a camera system in the district office to go with that as well. And RAND's got to start on a yearly preventive maintenance program. We basically start that in October and run that through June or July. You may wonder why we don't run that right through the summer. That's because we usually have to have August and September ready to get those schools open and all the things that go along with that, and you've heard me talk about it from time to time. We had quite a few outside contractors on premises the last month. Bear Electric completed the cafeteria exhaust hood project, so now we are in compliance there. That's very exciting for all of us. Rainforest Contractors replaced some hazardous cement slabs at the southeast corner of the district office. Superintendent Klupainer and I are also looking at other slabs that are deteriorating, and we hope to find funding for that later in the year. Bandingling Electric wired the high school snack cart to accept a refrigerator and warming element. That was some major electrical work there. Fleet Refrigeration and Mattingly Electric have been installing a new chiller in the saltwater aquarium. And then the Stedman remodel. We're getting to the point where we can finally say that we're closing that project out. And these are the last four or five things that happened. Cement ramp was poured at the cafeteria loading dock by Rainforest Contractors. John Taylor and Son added required fire sprinklers to the loading dock. Sitka Electric installed ADA door openers at three major entrances and did some warranty work on our classroom lights. And finally, Nordic Electric added lights to the elementary library to correct some illumination deficiencies in there. Well, that's as quick as I can do it. Is there any questions?
A lot of activity.
Thank you.
Thank you. It has been busy.
The school looks great. We take it for granted sometimes. We walk into this beautiful, clean building and
everything works.
Yes, so thank you. It does look really nice.
I'm appreciative of my staff and what they can do for all of us.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, principal's report. Mr. Garmer.
Good evening. Hi. Yes, I'll keep it short. In fact, I wanted to start by just picking up. Dan's just been, his crew's been amazing, super busy. We've had some bigger home events as well as just changes in weather, all kinds of stuff. So really appreciate the work you're doing. I thought it's fair. I don't remember if we talked to the board about this, but there's additional 15 cameras in the shop, which kind of is a four classroom area, and we just wanted to assure people it is not so that we can, we're worried about people, you know, doing bad things in there or anything at all like that. We added all that 3D MakerBot stuff, and that is in the shop now. And with that being a separate building, we thought if we're going to put thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars out there in that building, we probably should put some security cameras around it. So that was the major push for it. Mr. Owens has a pretty cool thing where he's got an iPad. It does help him having four classrooms. If he's working with some kids in the wood shop, he can kind of check on kids in the classroom or the smallest. So it does allow him a little bit just to kind of make sure, you know, if kids need his help to go in there. And as we've often talked with Mr. Pop as well, it's hard to spread one person across four classrooms. But the main reason really was just based on lots of equipment in there. So just wanted to make sure we weren't, nothing bad was happening there. We weren't responding to that. We were just making sure we're protecting our investments. So, and again, appreciate Dan and Caleb, and John did a bunch of work as well, kind of researching, getting it out there and getting it going. So it's pretty cool stuff. This will probably come up more, but just to talk about the Veterans Assembly is tomorrow, and so really inviting everyone in the community would like to come. That's at 9:30 in the gym. It's an high school gym that is a district-wide, so you'll see representatives from elementary, middle, and high school there. And thank you again so much. Matt Lenhard and Jim Engel and Greg Kowalski have really spearheaded that. I know Dan Tate and his maintenance crew, again, are doing a lot of work on the front end of that, but it's going to be great. It's been a good time, again, just to recognize the importance of Veterans Day as a district. Obviously, an excellent time to honor our veterans in the community. It's really cool. And then just a lot of students' voices, which we love to see. As Mrs. Superintendent KP was saying, it's great to see so many kids come together and lend their voices, whether it's music, maybe reciting some the Gettysburg Address or stuff like that, or just their personal feelings towards what a great impact veterans have on us. So pretty cool. 9:30 tomorrow. Again, that is district-wide and open to the community. So I just want to make sure I put a plug in for that. Also here on the board, because this is our only November meeting, I just wanted to also explain as you get around that it is No Shave November or Brovember, and so many of the staff look poor. Mr. Cabral actually He says his volleyball team, he says it has to do with volleyball and going to state and all that, and so we're giving him a pass. But we do want to, it's a really great event, and several of the staff members, and we involved the students, and obviously it's an awareness of men's health. It's a national movement, but it's cool having a lot of people, a couple people in the borough also are mm-hmm. participating, a couple dads there, so it's just a fun thing as you go around and see that. And again, just awareness for men's health at the end. Sometimes the middle school will do kind of raise less than $100, but just a fun thing for kids to be involved and to make it fun, and then we send the proceeds to a men's health organization. So just so you knew what was going on. Yeah, fun stuff. It's itchy. And then finally, also just a couple weeks ago, we had some great in-service time, and I'm obviously speaking, it was great district-wide, and also just for the secondary building, we had really used the 2 days well. Just again, we always have impressive professionals and our teaching staff that get together and work. Pretty cool. And we spent, you spent some time with School Climate Connectedness, and we did the same thing, a little longer presentation, but a great chance to see how our students view the climate in the school, which was worthwhile, and got some great things out of that, as I'm sure you did as a board. We also spent a lot of time on our digital presence, which was great, and it was a lot of teachers teaching teachers, which is pretty cool. You know, we work on trying to have students teach students, but it was cool. We have local experts, but in different areas. It wasn't just John up there leading the show or me trying to spout my wisdom the whole time. It was just teachers helping each other really improve, whether it's a web presence or it's a learning student management system or a learning system that they're using with students. Lots of different ways that the teachers were able to raise that level, which is great because that benefits, obviously, students as well as teacher efficiency. And then we spent a lot of time on Friday and the last day on curriculum, which is great. And I know district-wide we're continuing trying to move forward with the Common Core and getting all of our curriculum as clean and certainly aligned K-12 as we can. And so it was a really useful time, and I really appreciated the time in the calendar, and I know teachers did too, so that was great. And that's my presentation. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Principal Mrs. Tolan.
Okay, good evening. It's really nice to be here. It was fun to see our students bring their presentations tonight, and I'm so proud of them and for the teachers. They are up and down our halls. We have all kinds of good things going on. Things that are happening in the elementary school, when we had our renovation, we had the 1% art money that was contracted out, and Pia Riley was the recipient of that, and so she is currently working on some painting inside the entryways of both entries, and it's looking very beautiful and bright and very, very Pia. So it will be very nice when she's done, and there's also some outside work that she'll be doing, some signage and a beautiful tree on the end of the building. So that's fun, and we completed our original works fundraiser, and that was headed up by Katie Gilpin, and she's been doing that for the last few years, and we want to thank her for her dedication to that throughout these many years, and this was her last year for doing that, so we're very grateful to her. We had a fire drill that was a little surprise for students and teachers, and it happened when we had planned it but did not let staff and students know because it was going to be in when most of the kids were in the lunchroom or at recess. And so we'll be doing a little bit more of that so that we're prepared no matter where students may be, that they know they get out of the building and where to go. So that was a good learning experience for all of us. Pi is having their t-shirt order open throughout today. So if you haven't ordered, you can still do that online. And our next Pi meeting will be next Tuesday at 4:30 at the elementary library. And we invite all parents, guardians, anybody interested to come and help us out with that. We've also been working on social studies and science curriculum at our in-service meetings. Our classroom teachers focused on Go Math. We had a trainer come in, and she was fabulous, and the staff learned a lot from her, and so it was time very well spent. We're coming up on the end of our trimester and on the 13th of November, and we'll be having conferences Tuesday afternoon and evening on the 24th and Wednesday morning the 25th. So we're anxiously looking forward to visiting with families at that time, and just happy to report that things are going well.
Thank you.
Okay, the activities report, Mr. Cabral.
Got a comment to Dan Tate from a couple of the teams that were here. They said, your guys' school is very gorgeous and clean. So thank you, Dan Tate. There's a lot of comments from a lot of the teams that were here when we had, holy moly, 130 kids here. I think it was great. Lots of stuff happening in activities. Our National Ocean Science Bowl team just got back from Sitka. They were in Sitka for the Whale Fest. We had Julia Murph, Joseph Giesbrick, Ms. Johnson, and Sonny Rice head up that group, and they're a very competitive National Ocean Science Bowl team and highly, highly ranked and feared at the Ocean Science competition in February. Mr. Dormer got to attend, what was that, 2 or 3 years ago? My goodness, it's very... very intense. You thought the spelling bee was intense. I think this one's a little bit more. So Helen Martin, Marissa Nielsen, Charlie Christensen, Anders Christensen, Tucker Hageman, and Chelsea Sandhofer did a great job over there as they get ready to do their big projects for the ocean science. Our music program just got back from Southeast Honors Music in Wrangell. It's the 140, voted by all the directors, 140 top musicians in Southeast. We're the only region that does something like this, and so it is pretty cool. We had Kaylee Eddy, Alexandra Bliss, Brandon Mulberry, Evan Lenhardt, Nathaniel Lenhardt, Hannah Font, Julia Murph, Aaron Font, Andrew Duddles, Kirk Evans, Ben Higgins, Corn Spirit, Chad Lopez. That was, I think, Mr. Lenhardt's biggest group ever that qualified for that. And then we also have our state qualifiers that will be heading up to the State Music Fest in a week and a half, and I think that is Hannah Font, Julia Murph, and Ben Higgins got voted in but for that at the state level. So very, very good honors for Mr. Lenhardt and his music program. As always, great, great program. Our wrestling team is headed over to Craig this weekend. We get our first adventure on the Rainforest Island Ferry as they are up and running, and I get to meet one of their head people this coming Friday and talk to him about how the schools can better utilize that service between Kaufman Cove and Wrangell and Banana Point. So it'll be a good meeting with him this coming Friday. Working with Alaska Airlines to better serve Southeast, and they have actually donated 2 unrestricted free round-trip tickets that we're going to raffle off at our Region 5 wrestling tournament. So they would like the money to go back to all the activities at the school. So another way to help fund and offset some of those costs as everyone is reducing their funds and everything. So it's very, very helpful. Casey Hostetler at Alaska Airlines, Karen's friend. Got to meet her. She's pretty awesome. Very, very helpful with a lot of stuff with all of our groups and everything. Middle school basketball and cheer just got done down in Ketchikan. They came back this past weekend. And then high school volleyball is going well. And they'll be heading off to regions next week in Skagway, Alaska. So we get to be on the ferry for 36 hours. And
that should be fun.
That'll be great. It'll be fantastic. My goodness, what else is going on? I think that is it. There's a luau this weekend if you're bored. Mr. Dormer will be dancing. And it'll be great. One of the big things that we are doing as far as the activities department, we're doing what's called an emergency action plan. We've got this brought up to us at our Region 5 board meeting and having all the schools trying to get involved with it. So basically what it is a lot of times after school hours, a lot of doors are locked, a lot of rooms are locked, but that's when we have the most activities going on and a lot of kids still in the building. So basically what we did with our volleyball team is we created a emergency action plan where everyone is responsible for something different that's going to happen. So if we had an emergency, and the example was if I dropped to the floor and passed out because I didn't get enough sleep, although there is proof that I sleep, I heard. The 911 team, the CPR team, the who's waiting for the ambulance team, who's calling parents team, and all of our girls. We did a practice run with it one day at practice, and we had 2 girls that are always in pods, and 2 kids wait outside for the ambulance to show up with the door open. Who's calling 911 with the phone? Who's calling Heidi or whoever the parent is of the student that's there, because usually they all have their parents' phone numbers. 2 CPR people who are certified in CPR. Lucky us, we have 2 lifeguards on our volleyball team, so they can do their certified CPR trainers. And then we also have the people who are trying to get the AED and know where the AEDs are. So the girls were kind of freaked out a little bit about it, like, I don't like this. Like, what if it does happen? But with, I think, nationwide right now, we're at about 18 students that have dropped at practice or at a game or something of that sort that have passed away. So it's kind of a growing thing, and it's a program called Anyone Can Save a Life. It's online, and we're going to have all of our coaches do it and kind of know who the team is and who's doing what. So kind of neat and just a little bit more secure if something happens at practice. So it's a really, really neat program that we're doing. So we've got it all set. We've practiced one time, and I think it went well. It was awesome. So it was very, very cool. So something people really don't think about, and so all of our girls know where the AEDs are in whichever building and who's got what job. So, and then we also have a heat stroke team, just in case somebody's dying of heat stroke. So we always have the heat stroke team, who's grabbing the ice, who's grabbing the water, who's doing this. So pretty, pretty neat. Good stuff that I'm going to have all of our coaches and all our programs start doing. Just nice to have, and it's all on a clipboard, and it's very simple to keep track of. So I think that is it. Any questions?
Because our middle school volleyball, in case people think that the boys are traveling twice, do you mind?
Oh, yes. So what we have here, a middle school can only travel one time, according to our policy. So the boys basketball team, their A team went down to Ketchikan. And then we have a lower B team, which is the younger kids. They will be going to Wrangell, but it's totally different students who are traveling. And in reality, it actually saves us money. It's because of Wrangell as being the shorter trip and cheaper on the ferry. And we also get to go to send the boys team to the Stikine tournament, which is a rotating tournament, and the reciprocation piece of that, of sending them to the Stikine when we host it in 2 years when we get it back. So the stigma is out there that boys basketball is traveling twice. Coach Powick is traveling twice to chaperone the boys, but he's coaching two separate, totally different teams on that one. So, yeah. Lucky Matt. He's excited. Yeah. Question. Ready.
I have a couple questions. Did you mention the kids that were in Anchorage this last weekend?
Yes, swimming, and yes, that's my next one.
Wrestlers?
Yeah. So swimmers, we had two students qualify, Isabel Eath and Ben Higgins. They got to go up to the state swim meet. They didn't get out of their preliminaries, but they both PR'd in all of their events, which was really, really good. Ben does the 500. It's kind of like the track and field 400. I don't know why people do it. It's long. It's a long, long race. So the 400 in track and field is brutal, and the 500 is forever long. I think Ginger can accompany that one. Oh, it's more than a 400, but the 400 sprint is just hideous. And then we had three wrestlers go up to Anchorage Wrestling at ACS. I don't know if you guys got to see them while you guys were up there. That was great. Four got go up to ACS, so it was a great tournament up there. ACS is one of the biggest tournaments in the state. So it's Jason up there at ACS does a nice job of running that tournament. So it's 1-2-3A's and good for seeding. Good for seeing what's out there. I'm sure the Kotzebue boys were up there as well. Yeah, the men. It was crazy. 385 wrestlers. Yep, at ACS. And they travel well because of all the small villages and schools. I think the whole town of like Onaktuvik Pass shuts down because they're down in Anchorage, and it's a good shopping trip for them. But our kids were all over the place. It was great. And so, yeah, it was awesome.
Well, I got asked by the Cordova School Board, one of the Cordova School Board men, who has a daughter who's a volleyball player.
There,
he wanted to know how good we are, and I said, you should be afraid.
No, yes. And I had that same question.
I got to text my daughter.
We had that same question because we're looking at this new website called ASAA 365 where we're required to put in our scores, and I saw Cordova was undefeated as well. So it was
that's really right.
Calling up the friends, hey, what do you know? Yeah. So it's really good. It's interesting. The girls are excited, and they're kind of getting giddy because it's very close. So, but yeah, Cordova, I heard, is pretty good. They have a long history of being very well. Very good.
Well,
scary.
I'll have to tease them next year with you guys.
I know, right? Chances we're going to see somebody from their conference. So hopefully, if we make it. So.
And then when is Region 5 Wrestling Tournament?
Region 5 Wrestling Tournament, December 11th, 12th. Here in Petersburg, expecting about 200 some students here. So it's going to be very, very large. It's the first time in history that we are running three separate tournaments, an all girls weight classes mm-hmm. as one tournament, 1-2-3A boys as a tournament, and 4A boys as a tournament. So
oh my
we get to be the first test run and see how it works. It's because the 4A schools, Thunder Mountain, Ketchikan, and Juneau Douglas, are on the same seasons as 1-2-3A, which in the past never used to be because of football at the 4As and basketball and the overlap there. So first time ever, so it'll be great.
Yeah,
it'll be, yeah. I know, right? Oh, my goodness.
What are they going to eat? I don't understand.
Yeah, we got that plan ready to rock. Cindy Fry in the music department is planning up the meals and doing all that stuff in concession stand and all that great stuff. And coordinating with Dan Tate and our custodial services of getting them in there to clean, because I'm sure we'll have a lot of people in here. And wrestling in Petersburg's pretty big, so, yeah, good history here to have it. Looking at about 200 minimum.
And that's just kids, right?
That's just kids, mm-hmm. not including fans. Yeah, yeah. And then we're also hosting baseball regionals this year, too. So
glutton for punishment.
Never ending. It's great, though. It's good for the community.
It is. So, it's really good.
It'll be packed houses all over the place.
Yeah.
Businesses will be booming.
Busting.
Yeah.
Thank you for all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It'll be great.
Great.
Looks like upcoming dates and media announcements, as we you may have heard earlier, but in case those of you who are just joining us, tomorrow there is a Veterans Day Assembly at 9:30 in the high school gym. It's open to the public. We encourage people to be able to come and enjoy that while we honor our local veterans. And students, it sounds like, are going to be participating and honoring them K through 12. On the 24th of November, we have parent-teacher conferences. And then on the 25th, we also have parent-teacher conferences, but there's no school district-wide on that day. Then that gets us into, that would be probably Wednesday, since the Thanksgiving holiday weekend is the 26th and 27th. And before we know it, it's the end of the month, and we'll be setting the board agenda again. does Monday, is that, what is the 30? That would be a Monday, right?
Yes.
So maybe, does, get out of that. The afternoon does still work on Monday, those Mondays for people like 4:30? Do you have meetings usually on that Monday, don't you?
No.
Meetings every day.
I know. I guess I should rephrase that. Do you need another board member, or is it just you? No, we have one other board member. Oh.
I can go.
Okay. Can we tentatively say then the 30th at like 4:30?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Oh, sure. Sorry, Rick.
No, just
something on the agenda that we don't know about.
Correction there that the middle school and high school are doing conferences on Monday and Tuesday, which I think is the 23rd and the 24th.
Oh, okay.
And they're after school time. It's a 4 to 8 and a 3 to 8.
4 to 8 on the 23rd and 3 to 8 on the 24th?
Yeah.
Okay, so for those that are listening, on the 23rd, you've got middle school and high school. Okay, it's from 4 to 8 on the 23rd, which would be Monday.
Yeah.
Okay. And Tuesday, and then grade school is Tuesdays and Wednesday. Check the school website if that's not clear.
Yes.
And I'm sure it'll be in the bulletins, too, that are sent out every day. We've got a student recognition and reception for 6:15 on the 8th, which will be the first, pretty much the first quarter. Oops. Sorry about that. And that will also be our next regular board meeting here in the assembly chambers at 7 p.m. That day we also have Campus Connections at 12:30. Anybody available to do that?
I can do it.
Okay.
People may be tired of hearing me.
I can do it too,
but
unless someone else is dying to do it.
I have no problem doing it.
I know you're busy. It's all right. All right, I'll do it again.
Sunday, Jay.
We're going to catch you. Okay.
My calendar now.
Moving on to old business. Oh, shoot. Sorry, just a minute. Naming schools and facilities. Board policy 1331, naming schools and facilities. It's the second reading. We're going to... After recessing for a public hearing on this policy, the board will consider approving BP 1331 at the second reading. So I will recess at this time for any public testimony on the naming schools and facilities. If anybody would like to testify on behalf of that, I'm going to go ahead and just read it. It's a pretty short policy, but I thought in case you're listening out there,
Namings may be proposed by petition by appointment committees or representative groups in the area. All requests for the naming of facilities, auditoriums, libraries, and grounds must be presented to the superintendent through a formal letter with a reason for the request. A review committee will be formed consisting of a school board member, a borough assembly member, an administrator, the school district maintenance director, a mental health professional, a staff member, and a community member. The board, after appropriate public input and upon recommendation from the review committee, will make the final decision in the naming of the school facilities. These guidelines are intended to include, but are not limited to, persons living or deceased who served in the Petersburg School District, who've made significant contributions to the district through of service, exemplary leadership, philanthropic contributions, or other significant means. Two, persons so honored have either accumulated their career in Petersburg School District, retired from the district, or passed away while still actively employed. Nominations will be considered 3 years after the service, contribution, or death of the individual. Building administrator will determine the placement, location, and size of any pictures and or plaques displayed of a person so honored. Existing district facilities named in honor of the school community members and their accompanying pictures and plaques will be retained. So if there's any other, nobody wants to speak on it, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing and make a motion to approve BP 1331, naming schools and facilities, at the second reading. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion on this?
I could say something quickly, since I participated in the policy committee that considered the naming policy. I think it seems like it's, you know, very in line with what other naming policies around. I think when we think about the names of the auditorium and the elementary school, that it's a good common sense policy. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay. All those in favor? Signify. Or is that a roll call? Is it a roll call? That's fine. Okay, please call the roll. Sharon?
Cheryl Biles?
Yes.
Megan Litzer?
Yes.
Sarah Humphrey?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Darren
Tomsky? Yes. Okay, motion passes 5-0. Next we have Board Policy 1332, which is the memorials policy. I'm going to recess for a public hearing on this policy. The board will delay the approval of this policy at second reading and the final reading until December 8th, 2015 regular board meeting so that we could have further testimony. So I'll go ahead and recess. Is there anybody that would like to speak? Mackenzie?
My name is Mackenzie Peeler. I'm here on behalf of myself and the Mattson family. I know in considering your guys' policy, there are going to be three memorials that are going to be left out, one of which is my cousin Jacob Mattson's memorial that is in the high school gymnasium. The memorial was dedicated by his high school teammates, and there was a public acknowledgement of the giving of the plaque to the family, community, and the students. And I think what the family's struggling with the most right now is, how can you take that down? How can you take a memorial down that's been there? And it's very hurtful in the way that it's been brought up, and unfortunately, we can't do anything about that. That is in the past. But going forward, you know, our hopes would be that the policy committee would reconsider leaving his memorial up and grandfathering it in with the rest of the memorials, because it really does mean a lot to a lot of people in this community. It means a lot to the family, and to take it down just seems so terrible and so cruel to his memory. He was, after all, a student and a basketball player, and you know, a lot of his classmates still reside in Petersburg, and his family lives here, and it gives the students a sense of, you know, we came together as a student body, we made this for him, we can come around the, you know, memories that we have of him, and I would really hope that the policy in the recess for postponing the memorial policy would consider grandfathering in his memorial along with the other ones. Thank you.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Is there anybody else that would like to publicly testify at this time? Okay. I was going to read a statement mostly just to give, in case anybody had not been able to follow along the progression that the policy committee took. So kind of get a little bit of background in case you weren't fully up to speed on the progression we've had over the last couple of months. The memorial policy is one of many we're either considering adopting or have changed in the last few months. The policy committee has fallen gravely behind and was making an effort to get caught up on changes, but also to review and potentially recommend policies to the board that it did not have. The policy committee has met several times for several hours at a time over the course of 2 months, drafting the language for the policy as well as others. There was no intent whatsoever to adopt a policy to directly address a specific memorial. Rather, it was the fact that we had no policy in place for memorials. In the event of another tragedy, there was simply nothing for the administration to consult or follow. We do know that tragedies will strike our community again, and we need a policy that is responsible, equitable, fair, and considerate to all. It's unfortunate some recent conversations have centered not on the actual language in the policy or of its sound policy, but rather conversations have been about one specific existing memorial. That was never the intent. It's always been to produce a sound policy that addresses memorials now and into the future. The policy committee read extensively on the subject of memorials in the public schools. Please see some of the articles in the back, or if you're listening, we're happy to give you copies of those articles. They discuss the fragility of students who may not be mentally stable. The articles address the inherent risks associated with children on the edge, not thinking rationally, and then seeing memorials. As a result of those articles, the committee consulted local mental health professionals, Petersburg Mental Health, True North Counseling, the district counselors, and state mental health professionals. They sought their professional opinions on the language proposed and their thoughts about the staff and student memorials on campus. The committee also talked to current high school students during this process. They asked the ASB officers to talk to their classmates and report back. Students reported large displays and plaques were difficult to look at. It made them sad. Although this may not be a reason to take down any of the memorials, they did express confusion in the relevance of having permanent memorials at school, since other permanent memorials existed around the community, such as the Fisherman's Memorial, Veterans Memorial at the cemetery, the building wall of art at the dance studio in remembrance of Gabrielle Etter, and the quilt at Petersburg Medical Center, to name a few. The school is a community facility that we all enjoy using and visiting. However, it's a closed learning environment for students, meaning students have no choice but to walk past the existing memorials except for Don Schultz's, which is actually located in the district office. A memorial is a visual reminder, and when on school grounds, students can't avoid them if they make them sad or upsets them. We have no idea the impact they may or may not have on a child now or in the future. Just because some people may find happiness and joy in seeing a memorial, it does not mean everyone finds that same joy and happiness. Some in the community have suggested a community memorial site for children lost too soon. I absolutely love this idea. This would allow community members of all ages to gather at a specific site similar to the Fisherman's Memorial and the Veterans Memorial and always remember those children no matter how young they were and no matter how many years have passed. Let's rally together and create a public place to mourn, remember, cry, smile, and laugh at the memories of loved ones. And let the most fragile, often our children, choose to visit the memorial site on their own terms and on their own timeline. Thank you. Is there any other further public testimony before we...
Can I make a statement?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say that we have, myself and I'm assuming other board members, have been receiving feedback from folks in the community. Since we are tabling this, I hope we would continue to hear from people. That's why it's being tabled. We've received emails with a variety of different viewpoints, and they're helpful, and they help guide us in how to proceed, just along with the testimony from folks tonight. So I hope that people would continue to talk with us and let us know how they're feeling, or if they have ideas, anything, we can chat about it in a formal or informal way. So I just encourage people to reach out. I'm happy to answer any questions I can.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. I will call the meeting back to order. And I will make a motion to table Board Policy 1332 Memorials at second reading until the December 8th, 2015 regular meeting.
I'll second.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. Sharon, can you call the roll?
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Megan Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Jill
Pyle?
Yes.
Marla
Kunsky?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 5-0. It will be tabled until December, and we encourage you to talk to board members. Next, we move on to new business. The FY15 audit presentation. Looks like Vicki Shrestha from, what does BDO stand for?
BDO.
Oh, that's what it means. Okay, I didn't know it was an acronym for something else. The district's accounting firm will be presenting telephonically to present us with our audit and answer any questions.
Good news is I don't have to really do anything because Vicki's going to walk through this presentation for you guys. The only thing I do want to say is that our financials are due to the Department of Education by November 15th. These are currently a draft because we're still waiting on GASB 68 to be finalized. That's the new regulations that the district is required to report.
Careful, you guys.
Our portion of the liability.
Hello? So,
hi, this is Vicki calling from BDO.
Hello.
Hi, Vicki.
So, how are you guys doing?
Good.
I don't like
good.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I'm in a really late meeting today, huh?
Yes, we are.
Anyways, so you can let me know how you guys want to proceed. I sent, you should have the financial statements with you over there, and there's like a PDF that we were going to go through, but I can just focus on certain things in the PowerPoint, I mean, or I can go through it as regular, however you guys want me to do it, so.
What do you guys want? It's a board's pleasure.
Let's see the highlights.
They want highlights, Vicki. They have the draft financials in front of them, and we're going to test them on it later, so we can just get the highlights now.
All right. Well, first of all, let me just start by saying this year, the financials, usually by this time, I think we usually already print or like really close to printing the financial statements, but this year, all governmental agencies, basically any agencies that have employees, basically, that receive like state funding and stuff, they are all delayed. The main reason being this year, all the governmental agencies, like GASB, made you guys all implement something called GASB 68. And basically what that means is now, for the first time, the net pension liability for your past employees or anybody that you still have employed that were in the defined benefit plan for both PERS and TERS has to be included in your financials. And that number is being provided by the state. And the retirement division is still going through an audit, and they haven't finished auditing yet, but they have provided draft numbers. And they, according to the last we heard, they don't think the numbers are going to change, but nothing, it's not final yet. So until that thing is final, we cannot print the financials.
Okay.
So, but on that note, we have included the draft numbers into the draft right now, the draft pension numbers, and there's like a lot of footnotes that goes with it, and this was actually one of our partners had to spend like lots of time coming up with the footnote templates and all that stuff. So, but anyway, so as far as the financials, I don't know if you have the PowerPoint over there, if that's been presented. Maybe I could go through the PowerPoint and then I can skip some of the slides, or if you guys want me to talk a little bit more about some of the slides, you can just stop me and let me know too.
We have the PowerPoint up so everyone can see, and why don't you hit the highlights, and then if there's questions, we can address those.
So as far as the first one is like the opinion, it's a straightforward, clean opinion, no issues there. And then the statement of net position is on page 14.
No, stay on page 3. It's page 14 in the...
Yeah, page 14 of, yeah.
You want me to drive, Erica?
Yeah, page 3 in the... And the reason I wanted to point this out is there's a few new things in here, plus I just wanted to tell you about the difference between the financial statements here. So basically, page 14 and 15 of the financial statements are what they say is on an accrual basis of accounting, and then the rest of the financials are on a modified accrual basis. So any financials patch, phase 15, is more like on a budgetary basis. Basically, that's how you run, you know, only the current stuff are included there. There's only like current assets and liabilities, while the first two statements have all of your long-term assets and liabilities in there too. So on page 14, this will look different than what it normally looked in the past. So there are three items in here that Gatsby 68 that I just talked about earlier brought in. So that's there's something called deferred outflows for pension related items, deferred inflows for pension related items, and the big number, the net pension liability, which is the $3.2 million. And one thing I do want to represent to you guys is the pension number, the state gives you, it's all the number that's over here, it's all available on the retirement website. And so these financials are presented on the basis that there is a special funding. So in Gatsby 68, there's something called special funding. In your case, what that means is, like, right now, the school district only has to contribute 22% for PERS employees and 12.56% for TERS employees to the retirement plan. The rest is covered by the state, and it comes in as that on-behalf payment that you receive every year. You don't get the cash itself, but the on-behalf is paid directly into the retirement plan. So these financial statements are presented as if it's a special funding, so this liability is actually a lot lower and what it would be if there was no special funding. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Makes sense to me, but I'm not sure about everybody else.
All right. But that's a big issue with the state right now, because state is not considering it a special funding state, meaning the Department of Law at the state, but their auditors and Les Audit, who actually audits the state, are taking everybody else, basically all the accounting field people, are taking the stand that it's a special funding. So that's a controversial thing, so I just wanted to let you know that that's what's happening.
Okay.
So the whole gist of this thing is, now if you look at your net position at the end of the year, it's for the first time it's a negative number. And the reason this is negative is because of the pension liability. So that's what I wanted to point out here, and that's really what is really different from any other year in the financial statements. So after that, we'll go to page 16 of the financial statements. And from here, I'll just highlight items in here. So page 16 is your balance sheet, and this one shows as your assets, what you own, your liabilities, what you owe, and your fund balance at the end of the year. And over here, we have to present it at the major fund level. There's a calculation that has to be done based on assets, liabilities, revenue, and expenditures that makes some funds bigger than the others. So they are major, and then the rest of it is in this non-major fund. Over here, total assets, $8.2 million. Most of that is cash, $2.7 million. The total fund balance at the end of the year was $2.7 million. Most of everything is in general fund 1.3 and capital projects of 1.1. So the next phase I want to focus is phase 18. And that's your statement of revenue, expenditures, and change in fund balance. This is basically, if you went to a for-profit organization, this is your profit and loss statement. So this one shows all your revenues that came in during the year, expenditures during the year, and your change in fund balance. Your total revenue for the year was $18.9 million. And one thing you have to keep in mind is out of this $18.9 million, $10,300,000 of that is your first and third contributions for the year. I'm sorry, not 10 million. $8.5 million is your first and third contribution, leaving you with cash or revenue actually received of $10.3 million. So when you look at this number, like, it's really skewed this year, and one of the reasons numbers are really high this year is because the on-behalf payment was, like, crazily high this year. The state contributed $2 billion to PERS and $1 billion to PERS to close the gap a little bit. So the on-behalf this year is, like, I don't know, what is it, like 5 or 6 times the normal number or so, Karen?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that's why these are...
Yeah. So anyway, so that's what's going on there. So the next slide, I mean, I can skip through that. There's just transfers. You can see that in the financial statements.
These are transfers that you guys have.
The next one I wanted to go to is probably page 40 of the financials. And this is one where you can just see your budget to actual for your general fund, because that's your main fund. All the other special revenue funds mostly are grants that you get from mostly federal and state agency that funds a specific program, but this runs most of your school. So, but you can see, like, what happened, like, during the year, and then you can see, like, what you originally budgeted versus what was actual numbers. As you can see, total revenue when you originally budgeted before the school year was $9.4 million for the general fund, and you ended up getting $16 million. And the reason for that is because of the $8.5 million of on behalf this year. So.
Well, that was because they did that revision after we had our board approve the last budget, mm-hmm. and we didn't for information. Presentation, we didn't actually do another formal budget revision, so I don't like these numbers being so off, but it is what it is.
Yeah, no, actually, again, the final numbers are updated, so it doesn't look as off anymore. But if you compare it to the original, it will be different. Just original meaning the one that's passed before the school year.
Oh, okay.
You didn't know there was going to be a big on behalf at that time, so.
No, I didn't, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's what that is. And the next slide over, this is your 70% minimum coverage for instruction that you need to get. This year's number is really skewed again because of the PERS contribution, and that makes the instruction really bloated, but still you easily met it this year. Actually, I'm going to skip through some of these slides, and I'm going to go to slide 10. Slide 10, which is page 52 of the financials. This one just shows what's in fund balance in some of your special revenue funds. Transportation fund right now has $76,000 fund balance, and food service has $156,000 fund balance. The next slide, page 53, shows your fund balances in your scholarship funds. There's about $81,000 there. The next slide, just to point out what happened with some of your major funds that actually uses some of the district money, like food service, for example, you brought in $211,000 of revenue. You spent $264,000, and $180,000 was transferred into food service. To cover this year's expenses and for future purposes too. Following that, I'm actually going to skip over the next few slides. I could go all the way to page 80 of the financials. So basically, in between these pages are a lot of details as to budget and actual information of every special revenue fund you had. So if you wanted to know how the money was spent for Title I fund, then you could go to one of those pages and see the budget and actual. So how much of it was salaries versus how much of it was professional services or student travel or staff travel, whatever those are. then you can go look at those in detail. So that's what those schedules are for. So I'm going to skip all of those and go to like page 80 of the financials, the page 15, I think slide 15 there.
We're there with you.
Okay. The reason I wanted to point out here, it just shows what you have left in fund balance in these capital project funds. You have $1,152,000 of fund balance for capital projects, and most of your money is in your kitchen remodel and your general capital project fund. And the next slide, page 81, shows the revenues that came in and the expenditures that you had in the capital project fund. The big project that was going on this year was the elementary school sidings. And you can see, you brought in $1.1 million and you spent $1,077,000 there. We'll skip over the next few slides. Page 90 and 91 of the report is your federal schedule. Page 92 is your state schedule, and behind that is the compliance section. And we have one finding this year, but we'll come back to that a little bit later. So let's just go through the 10-year comparative information of the assets and liabilities. We'll just go through these slides real quick. So total assets, from 2005 through 2015, you were at $1.2 million. Now you're at 3.5. Okay. Last year was a little bit high. You see $4.4 million. That's because you had some advanced funding from the state, either from the state or the borough for the elementary school siding project, about $800,000. So once you take that off, it'll be pretty similar to 2014. Your fund balance now is at $2.8 million. 2005, you are at about $800,000. The next slide, total revenue. It's pretty consistent for a while, hanging around 8 to 9 million mark, but you're at 10.4 million right now. This is, by the way, these revenues and the expenditures on the next slide excludes the PERS and TERS on behalf, because those are not actual expenditures that you actually pay out of your pocket, so that those are excluded from here. Next slide, expenditures, same thing, 2005, 6.5 million, now you're at $10 million. General fund revenue, the next slide, $5.6 million in 2005, now you're at $8.2 million. General fund expenditures, as the revenue grows, expenditure grows too, same way, $5.7 to $7.7 million. Next slide, the general fund balance, actually at the highest level it's been in the last 10 years anyways, it's at $1,033,000. Change in fund balance in the general fund was 306, so this was actually a pretty good year for you. You actually brought in more revenue than expenditures. Fund balance as a percentage, like the state doesn't allow you to keep more than 10% of your fund balance in the general fund there. So this year, you're good. It's at 7.56%. The PERS on behalf, TERS on behalf is skewing this number again this year. So it's showing up at 7.56%. Last year, you were at like 9.98. If the PERS and TERS were not allocated the same way as this year, then it'd probably be around the same percentage. Next slide is just the food service revenue to expenditure comparison. I think you can see amount in color over there, but you can see that it's for at least since 2009 or so, the expenditure has been much higher than the revenue. Transportation, usually, that's the same way. The last few years, the revenue actually has been a little bit higher than the expenditures. Next one shows your the amount of federal and state funding that you received during the year. You received $558,000 of federal funding and $15 million from the state of Alaska. One thing to note on this is The rules change a little bit for next year, for the next audit. So for this audit, we had to do a federal single audit and a state single audit. But if your funding stays the same, and next year you might not have federal single audit. Now, they increased the threshold to $750,000. So as long as the funding stays the same, next year we'll only have state single audit, which will be a little bit nicer just because we have to do a little bit less testing. So. Other than that, as far as compliance, there's one finding to report, and it's not that material of a finding. It's related to your food service fund. So when we are auditing, we noticed that the way the eligibility was determined, the system changed. Before, you used to do documentation in paper, I think, and somebody was signing up. And now all the information has to be entered in the state Primo Ed system. And what we noticed was one of the ones we tested, some of the income information was not put in there. And luckily the child was still going to be eligible for the program. But what we noticed here was during the whole process, one thing that was dropped was a review process for the information entered. So we're just suggesting that you guys just increase the... is the internal control so that there's a review process there. I think it's already been implemented now. So that's all I have. Try to keep it as short as possible there. So.
Do you guys have any questions for Vicki or for me?
I wonder what. Can we do anything without money?
Can we talk about that now at this moment?
Yes.
Okay.
I wouldn't put you on, so I don't want to put you on. I'll talk to you some other day.
Thank you, Vicki, for coming on so late and
thank you.
With us. And I guess.
And if you have any questions, you can email me too, but Karen should be able to answer most of your questions there too. So
assuming that nothing changes with the Department of Retirement and Benefits and the liability remains the same and they approve the draft documents tonight, then can we just move forward at this point, or do we have to...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we can. Even if anything changes, only changes on basically the first 6 or 7 pages of the report and a couple of footnotes. So it wouldn't skew any numbers, and I just hope they don't change the numbers at all. So, but I don't think they will. So if anything, there might be changes in some footnotes, but it's nothing that you'd have to get it approved again. I wouldn't think so.
And at this point, are we going to move forward and send this draft to the state, or are we going to wait until they have to finalize it?
Unless the state really wants to see the draft or something, I wouldn't do that. I think the state, the Department of Education, they know what's going on, and I think it's the expectation that the reports are going to be a little bit late, but it might not be a bad idea at least to communicate with them and say, we have the draft numbers, but... the auditors are working still retirement, website numbers. They go final.
They said December 10th is, even though by Alaska statute they're due on November 15th, they said that they'll accept it by December 10th with the hope that...
15th or so,
Okay.
I have one quick question.
Yeah, go.
I noticed that they said that the state did 5 times the contribution to PERS and TERS. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, some number like that. I don't know if it was exactly 5 times. So.
I might be missing something, but I thought the state was in financial crisis. Is 5 times the PERS and TERS contribution?
Well, before, they had already made their commitment at some point. So they need to fund this PERS and TERS anyways. So before it went into too deep of a hole, they had already made that decision. So I think beginning of the year or something, they contributed about $3 billion retirement, yes.
And this price of the
room. Politician math, then, okay.
Well, exactly. The thing is, no matter what, the state is liable for this liability. So, I mean, they could always change the rule and say you are liable, but how is the school or any of the other organizations supposed to pay the liability too? So, it, no matter what, it comes down to the state. And this is the same crisis facing pretty much most of the, boroughs and cities and states all across the U.S. too. So, the number was always there. It's just the first time it's been presented in the report now. So
they wait for them to be out of money before they five times the contribution, but okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it was exactly five times, but it was a lot higher than normal.
Thank you.
Okay, Vicki. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. You guys have a good night.
Yep. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye. Okay, while you're doing that, speak on the audit, on the finding.
Oh, we have to vote real quick.
Oh.
Sorry.
Did you want me to speak on the audit?
Oh.
Finding, that's what I'm talking about.
That would be helpful. Yeah.
So the background to that, so we are now using Primera Edge, which is a state-run software from the state of Alaska, EED. And with that, you have to put in the applications into the system. So if a parent signs on online, it's super great. We don't have to do anything. The system automatically checks it for us, and then we go in, we check it, we do that. What happened was when we get the paper applications in, you have to manually enter those, and that's where there was one, out of all the applications, one error, but which actually isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. So to rectify that, what we're doing is we're just having a second person look over that as we add it in. I mean, it's an extra step, but we still have the software that does all the calculations for us, so there's no math errors on our part. Mm-hmm. It's just making sure we get all the lines into the documents.
Can I just speak on internal controls, too, just to make sure that everyone knows what it is? It's basically a checks and balance. Mm-hmm. So it's not one person that's just putting all the data in. You have a second set of eyes. It's really challenging in a small school district because we wear so many of the same hats. I mean, in our office, in my particular office, everything goes across the room a million times just for a second set of eyes to look at that, and then, of course, it all goes to Erica as well. In Carly's department, it's a very, small department. She's doing all the entry, and what the auditors are suggesting is that there's just a second set of eyes looking at that data that she's entering. It's really not a huge finding, but it's basically a weakness in our checks and balances.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. I'll make a motion to approve FY 2015 audit.
Second.
Okay. Motion's been made and second. Do we need to do a roll call for this, Sharon?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead then, please.
Megan
Dexter? Yes.
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 Okay. Motion passes 5-0. Now we'll call you back up, Carly. Food Service Program Report. Food Service Director Carly Johnson will provide a report on the school year's program.
Awesome. Hello, good evening. So the first part, let's talk about DEC compliance. So that's what we've heard a lot about in the last year, is being compliant with the DEC. That is the Department of Environmental Conservation. So they basically tell us, if we're being safe and all of that. Well, we were out of compliance because we didn't have a hood system. Our floor was awfully horrible. And so we have done everything we can to try to fix these problems and do the best that we can. Our food service department itself is not necessarily bad. We're not unhealthy. We're not out of compliance. It's just we have a lacking facility. So now we're looking at our middle and high school serving lines. So there's still some compliance issues with that. So we're working on that. It's a process, but we're getting there. So that's where we're at with that. It's fun. It's interesting. It's a lot of awesomeness. So then we can go to the USDA Administrative Review. So if you weren't aware, my program's federally funded, basically, for the most part, and then I pull a bunch out of the general fund. But because of that, all of my stuff is regulated by USDA. I have an administrative review that's done once every 3 years. It used to be every 5 years. Now it's 3 years, part of the whole Healthy, Hungry, Free Kids Act. Really great document if you're bored. So that was supposed to be scheduled for November 2nd. It was delayed because of snow in
in Wasilla. So our auditor was not able to come here, so she'll be here January, February, and we're looking at that. We're sitting pretty good standings. I know from what we offer, our nutritional guidelines were great, so we should be pretty good. I really don't have any fears, but they might have some weird, crazy thing that they might find. Who knows? If you look at the form I passed out, there's the economic disadvantage report. So when we're talking about the audit, we talk about those free and reduced applications. It's on the back. Should we write on the back?
Sorry.
Did you get one?
There it is.
Okay.
Yep.
So this is what our basically our E-rate and anything that we apply for grants and everything like that, that's where those numbers come from. So the sad part is, So our economically disadvantaged students have decreased. We went from about 430 kids to now this year we have 466. So these are the exact numbers that are going to be reported to the state and have been checked. So this is going to be what our free and reduced percentage is going to be. Last year we were sitting at 50%, now we're 46% for the district. So middle school is 53, now we're sitting at 50%. High school is 41%, and the elementary is 47%. So those percentages are down. That's going to be a decrease in funding for things like fresh fruits and vegetable program and other things like that. And that actually might kick us off of the fresh fruits and vegetable program for next year. Mm-hmm. That is another federally funded program that we have. So that's the sad news of the economic disadvantage. Part of that is due to permanent fund dividends. The higher the permanent fund dividends are, mm-hmm. that threshold of families being able to come under that kicks them out. We had probably four families that got kicked off this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the nature of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look down to the participation rate, this is great news. So I did just a little snippet. We've got school year 2015, school year 2016. We got our breakfast and lunch numbers. So if you look at breakfast for last year for September, this year we've done 757 more breakfasts this year in the month of September. And then for the lunches, we've done 479 more meals.
Wow.
If you look at breakfasts for the month of October, we've done 1,404 more meals.
Oh, my gosh.
Crazy. And our lunches have been up by 511. Our after-school snack program the after-school snack program is it's a different program, a whole other entity, but it's an at-risk youth program. And we didn't do any in the month of September last year, but in the month of October, we've actually dropped down because we've kind of lost our high school participation.
Mm.
So, but we're still getting about 64 kids that we're feeding after school. So that's still pretty good. And in the month of September, we were feeding about 48. So right there, I mean, we're still feeding kids, some of them three meals a day. So that's the great news. So with that, you know, that's why you'll see our number or our cost is going to jump up, our labor is going to jump up. We try to do very minimal reheat and serve, so that's why our labor numbers are going to be a lot higher than you might see at other districts. But we're doing it. We're feeding them, not junk.
Very qualified.
I'm curious what that huge jump is, do you think, for?
So
just
for
because
breakfast,
the food is good and they realize it now?
You know, we've had a massive increase in elementary. The elementary students are easier to adapt and try new things and do it. This is going to be in my fifth year, and we're starting to see that move and progress into the upper grades, more participation. Mm-hmm. We do have a drop-off once they hit high school, which is going to happen forever. I mean, no matter how we do it, they'll drop off once they hit high school, but our middle school is still staying up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the breakfast, we now change the breakfast time for middle school to 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. and that's been a massive increase. Uh-huh. It's been clinically proven that most kids in adolescence ages are hungrier around, you know, 3 hours after they've been awake. So that 9 o'clock time is perfect time to get them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are just finishing their physical education.
Mm-hmm.
And then our elementary numbers for breakfast have been about 50 a day.
Oh,
so those have jumped up from about 10.
It's full.
It's great.
Whenever I'm in there in the mornings, it's just, the tables are just full of students.
And, I mean, part of that might be we have different options at breakfast. We do some baked goods. We do a little bit of cereal. We do yogurts and stuff like that. But most of it's pretty, it's not Pop-Tarts. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not whatever those burrito things were. So, yeah, I mean, they're recognizing what they're eating and being able to maybe progress with that.
You do a great job.
Second chance breakfast
stuff.
Doing second chance breakfast stuff.
Mm-hmm.
High school?
Yes.
And middle school.
High school,
is it
the
same time?
No. Middle school is at 9 o'clock and high school is at 9:20.
Okay.
When do you send out, or you notify parents around conference time who need to pay for lunches?
So, I used to try to do it, you know, I usually do it on in-service days.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I was pretty occupied with other stuff. Because we've had such an increase in participation rate,
mm-hmm.
some of that getting the notification has been a little behind, but we're working on sending it out for conferences so I can get that. Yes, and we take credit cards. And if you know your single sign-on for power mm-hmm. schools, you can pay your account online by yourself.
It's super easy. And you can always just put money on there so that they can work off of it.
You can always pay ahead, too.
I may need a tutor to do that. But I didn't realize how much budgeting and data entry and other things that you do. You know, we see you at school with our kids, with the food, and that's we think that's the limit of it. So thank you for all that hard work on the behind the scenes things that we don't realize is going on.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate all your hard work, and I really love the focus on real food. I don't know if I ever ate in the cafeteria when I was growing up because they pull back the film and hand you the tray. So, and my kids want to eat 3-4 times a week when they see the menu.
Especially
come
if
out.
It's fish.
So, yeah. my boys like the fish.
Yes, and you know, if some people might not know that we are on the list for the illegal kills or anything like that, and we do take that and we cook it, and we had moose chili, we had moose spaghetti, we had moose tons of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Moose tacos. It was awesome. So, yes, we do take that. And we no longer have our Alaskan food grant, so a lot of the Alaskan meats that I was buying, I will not be having because that is extremely expensive to not buy without a grant.
Mm-hmm.
So, awesome. Anything else?
Questions or comments?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, moving on to 13.3 personnel changes, we have actually three motions under 13.3. We have, I'll just go ahead and go into them because we have the addendum. First, I'll make a motion to approve the appointment of Irene Littleton to Superintendent Board Administrative Assistant.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. We're sad to see you go, Sharon, but I think we're going to be left in excellent hands.
Excellent.
We're excited for Irene to start learning and take over the reins in January. So, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0. The next motion, someone else can do it. I've been talking a lot tonight.
I move that we approve the employment of Sarah Pettibone to instructional assistant in the elementary school.
Second it.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 5-0.
Mm.
And two more.
I move that we approve the employment of Sina Warhatch, the elementary administrative assistant, who will be taking Irene's job.
Second it.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?